The following is a production of Vanderbilt's Owen Graduate School of Management. For more information about Owen, please visit owen.vanderbilt.edu.
This is Rob Simbeck for the Vanderbilt Owen Graduate School of Management. I'm talking today with Bart Victor, Cal Turner Professor of Moral Leadership, about new approaches to the problems of poverty. Half of the world's population lives on less than $2 a day. Government and private charitable efforts are noteworthy too often for their inefficiency, for the corruption that can accompany them, or for their failure to address underlying causes. On the other hand, China and India are both examples of an expansion of capitalism bringing quick and widespread economic progress. Still, large pockets of poverty remain there as they do worldwide. In a recent study, Professor Victor addressed current efforts to relieve poverty through the application of a practice called microlending. His findings shed fascinating light on an approach that has led to a Nobel Peace Prize for one proponent and enthusiastic participation on American college campuses. Professor Victor, let's start by defining poverty and looking at its extent worldwide.
Okay, Rob. I think that it's important to understand how our understanding of poverty and concerns about poverty are changing. Poverty is certainly most commonly understood as being the absence of income. However, we are concerned about poverty not because people don't have money, but because of the consequences of their poverty, the human suffering that's associated with it. And as we've tried to study what we can do about poverty, we've come to understand that underlying what is poverty itself and what causes the human suffering that we're concerned about is more than and more complex than simply not having money.
So if simple wealth distribution alleviated poverty, the world, of course, would be a much simpler place. The fact that it doesn't indicates that there are a lot of complicating factors, and I wonder if you can address those.
Well, exactly, Rob. In fact, you take a simple empirical observation. Two young men of similar circumstance in terms of poverty, for example, here in North Nashville and maybe in Kerala province in India, the young man in North Nashville may well be on even a purchase power parity, if you will, adjustment, be far wealthier than a young man in southern India who is similarly poor. However, that young man in North Nashville has a far lower quality of life. A shorter life expectancy, is far more likely to suffer disease, is far more likely to be a victim of violence. And so what we come to understand is that while income is important to influencing the conditions of poverty, it is not determinant, that there are many other factors that are associated with poverty and its consequences that we need to consider. Amartya Sen, a Nobel Prize-winning economist, characterized those factors as unfreedoms. That is, we lack certainly the freedom of choice that comes with lacking income, but we also lack the freedom to choose that comes with a lack of education, with a lack of rights, with a lack of access to the markets. And so when we look at trying to alleviate poverty, we have to understand that it is really a question of creating greater freedom and not simply of distributing income.
We've learned sometimes painfully that the classical approaches to charitable efforts have their own limitations and sometimes are even a little counterproductive. How does that set the stage for what we'll be talking about?
Well, there's a kind of, if you will, paradox that comes with charity and its consequence for poverty. That while charity can certainly work to alleviate the symptoms of poverty, it can provide food to those who are hungry, it can provide shelter to those who are exposed. The problem with charity, though, is that it doesn't transform the conditions of poverty, and under certain circumstances can actually unintentionally deepen them. That is, by putting someone in a position where they are receiving poverty, they are having to confirm their status is different, their status is being poor. And that actually isolates them even more than they were in the first place.
So that brings us to microlending. Can you tell us about it and where it came from?
Okay. Microlending is a variation on a very old theme, of course, but it has new meaning in growing, developing economies and in mature economies like the United States. What the basic idea of microlending is how do we create access to capital for economic development to those who are outside of the normal banking and capital distribution systems. And it began very, very simply by Muhammad Yunus, who was, in fact, a Vanderbilt graduate, an economist, who returned to his native Bangladesh to teach economics. And in his own concerns for the poverty, the deep poverty that surrounded him, he, out of his own pocket, reached in to provide some resources to the poor. But what he did was something very simple and very different. That rather than simply giving the money to the poor in need, he lent it to them. That is, he said to them, I will provide you with this money, but I expect to be paid back. And what he found was that not only was he paid back, but that those who were able to pay him back were able to pay him back with not just the money, but with the pride and their sense of achievement and new competence that came with taking out a loan, working to raise the money to repay it, and then actively repaying it.
And as I understand it, if there is a complicating factor, it is simply that there is an administrative burden that comes with that.
Well, the problem with microlending is that it's micro. These are very small amounts of money we're talking about. When we're talking about dealing with extreme poverty, the loan amounts are in ones of dollars and tens of dollars, not thousands. And so the cost for any given loan has to be carried by a very small loan amount. And so being willing to reach out to people who are isolated and who are starting from a very, very low base of need requires that we support the lending operation, that we actively, through our philanthropy, support the development of the economy of the poor.
What might a person, a neighborhood, a community affected by microlending look like? Give us a picture.
Okay. The way that microlending has emerged as global practice is that the poor face one fundamental problem in terms of qualifying for a loan. They have no collateral. They're poor. And so as a substitute for collateral, what microlending does is it organizes groups of people. And I should note that the primary beneficiaries around the world of microlending are women. And this is another extraordinarily radical innovation, is providing economic power directly to women. But what you would see would be a group of women would agree to, in a sense, co-guarantee the loan taken by one of them, so that those women provide what is called community capital or a shared commitment capital in place of a land guarantee or some other guarantee. And so what you would see in a community that is receiving microloans is groups of people coming together and working together and sharing commitments to their shared economic development. And that brings the entire community up. As they succeed in borrowing money, applying that money to productive activities, whether it's agriculture or building shelter or starting small businesses, and the entire community becomes more economically capable.
What does the Nobel Prize received by Muhammad Yunus tell us both about reaction to it and the practical effects? Is it translating into the kind of expansion of the concept that you'd hope for?
Well, it's an extraordinary thing sitting in a business school. Muhammad Yunus is the first business person to win a Nobel Prize of any sort. And to have a banker win the Nobel Peace Prize is something quite unique and meaningful for us in the business school, because what it says to us is that perhaps we are not limited in our ability to have impact on things that concern us, on conditions in the world that concern us, simply through our charity. There's the old Carnegie separation, that first we would do well and then we would do good. And what Muhammad Yunus has demonstrated to us is that we can do good while we are doing well. That is, we can utilize business to have direct positive consequence in the world.
Now, what have you seen among students as they react, as they try to carry this forward?
What we've seen among students is that they have embraced this possibility with an enthusiasm and a commitment that I, in my 25 years in teaching business school, have really never seen before. That our students have truly been excited about the possibilities of taking what they are learning and using it not just to pursue their own careers and to build their own futures, but also to have a direct engagement with the social problems that concern them, that matter to them in their own communities or in communities around the world. It's been an amazing journey for me to work with them and to learn about this with them.
Where do you see this going, and what will you be keeping your eye on?
Well, where I see it going right now is that we are looking for the limits of how business can have impact on the world in an intentional and positive way. So we're seeing more and more of the common business tools and approaches utilized. For example, we're seeing not just microcredit, but microequity. And we're seeing investment banking practices, and we are seeing product development practices, and we are seeing supply chain development practices, all of which are common conversational topics and subjects of learning here in the business school turn to direct impact on the poor of the world.
Thank you, Professor Victor. Bart Victor is Cal Turner Professor of Moral Leadership at the Vanderbilt Owen Graduate School of Management. For Owen, this is Rob Simbeck.